35 or 40 seconds before Steve Baker is actually at his 10 o'clock call to join us here at TNN Live. Why don't we call him together? We're going to find out, though, in just a second. One dingy.
Yo, yo.
Well, you answered in one dingy dingy. Way to go, buddy. Where are
you? It's easy when all I have my phone. I am I'm in the DC area.
Oh no, that won't fly. I want to know where you are. Yeah, I've got to send flowers somewhere.
you can send those posthumously to my daughter's house. I'll give you that.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. Busy, a lot going on. I don't know if anybody's looked at the news in the last couple of days, but there's a few things going on.
One or two.
Yeah. And fortunately I'm not involved in any of those. But I've got enough concerns of my own right now, in terms of what, Blaze has me working on.
Well, listen, you can tell Glenn, give him a message from Dan and say, we need Steve to have permission to give TNN Live and our audience the real inside skinny on things while you're investigating them, not after you figure it all out and you're going to go public with it. We want to be in the know all the time. And Steve, cross your fingers when you tell him this, but tell him I said, we're not going to tell anybody else. Just TNN Live, folks.
right, exactly.
Hey, I wrote and I published an article today at TNN Live. The title of it is What Trump's DC Takeover Looks Like on the Ground 2 weeks on. And let me tell you what it is. I'm sick and tired of hearing leftist rags with impunity come out and just start telling lie after lie, lie on top of lie, mm-hmm. about what's happened in Washington, D.C., and what happened previously and why it happened in Los Angeles and how it's going to probably happen in Chicago, maybe even Seattle, Baltimore, if these local and state leaders don't get off their arses and get something done regarding the rule of law. Not making things up as they go, but just do your freaking job and enforce the laws that you're saying Donald Trump is violating, which he's not. I get a little emotional about that. I'm sorry.
I was just watching a... press conference with the mayor of Chicago, and not so much a press conference, but a kind of a town hall ish event. And I think this was just yesterday, and he was just catching unlimited grief from his own citizens. I'm talking about people of color, people that live in the bad parts of town, and giving him incredible amount of grief for the lawlessness, for what they're having to put up with the illegal immigrants that are in their neighborhoods, that have been dumped in their neighborhoods. And then, of course, obviously, many of them are looking over at Washington, D.C., and are in support of what Trump has done there and are asking for him to take similar actions. Of course, he's standing there like a stone-faced, log. He had no reaction to this, his own citizenry and what they were putting him through and the message that they were delivering to him. And they're right. I mean, we do have people on the ground in D.C. I will be honest with you. I've been up here for 4 days. I have not crossed the river into D.C. yet. I hope that on this trip I don't have to. But all my meetings are on the other side of the river in Virginia.
No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. A good journalist would want to go check it out, instead of just talking about it secondhand. Are you getting soft on the job?
We have our own Blaze reporters over there doing the job. I don't need to be there.
I don't trust them, so, Steve.
Yeah.
We trust you.
Yeah, but they're reporting accurately and interviewing the citizens. Now, you know, it's a mixed bag. It is D.C. So when you have, I think that the records show that in terms of voter registration, DC is 75% Democrat registered. But when it comes to actual voting, if you look at the last two elections, Biden got 95.5% of the vote, and I think Kamala got 93% or 94% of the vote. So it's clearly a Democratic stronghold. So as a result of that, you're going to interview people on the streets there that are going to decry the president's efforts to clean up the streets, to get the criminal elements out of the. We're not talking about the outskirts of town. We're not talking about the ghetto. We're not talking about the far flung neighborhoods. We're talking about blocks from the Capitol where this incredible crime is happening, and where this lawlessness is, where the tent cities are, where people are, you know, just living under the bridges and horrible, and neglect and trash build up by the city, because, you know, the city workers aren't going to go down in there and amongst that element. They value their life as well. And so now that this is being cleaned up, it's forcing a significant percentage of that Democratic voter bloc to go, we kind of like this. I've lived here for 10 years and I've never seen that. I've never ever felt safe walking from this point A to point B, and now I can walk from point A to point B, and they like that.
Yeah.
Now there's, as I said, there's a significant resistance too, because they are so solidly Democrat, they're so solidly leftist. So more importantly, they're so solidly Trump derangement syndrome infected that it doesn't matter what. And, you know, we hear it all the time. If Trump legitimately himself came up with a cure for all cancers tomorrow, half of the Democratic Party would decry that, and just as the most ridiculous example of this was when he fast-tracked the vaccine during the COVID regime, which, of course, I was not a pro-vaccine guy at all. But nevertheless, when he instituted that, what did he call it, Operation, was it Lightspeed or Warp Speed or whatever he called it, to get the fast track on the development of that vaccine, there all the way up to and including then candidate for president Biden said, I will never take the Trump vaccine. And including everybody in the upper echelon of the Democratic Party was saying, no, there's no way I'll take this rushed Trump vaccine. Of course, the second that Biden won the election, that narrative flipped. The exact same vaccine and the exact Operation Warp Speed that was being managed by the U.S. military and fast-tracked by the military was then adopted by the Biden administration and then basically mandated throughout the governmental system. And he would have put a national mandate on all of us, even those of us who don't work for government, had he had even the slightest inkling of the thought that he could get by with it constitutionally.
Did you know this? I don't know if we've ever had this conversation, but when they did, they televised him getting the so-called COVID vaccination. Yeah. It wasn't the COVID vaccination. It was a high dosage of Prevagen. They wanted to give his cognitive ability a shot, you know, make it better real quickly. And it obviously it didn't work. So
yeah,
it may have helped his progress toward leaving office because he didn't know where he was half the time.
Right.
But you know what?
But this is typical because they're going to come out against it. Now, Dan, but this is a real bugaboo of mine. And if you've been looking at social media over the last several days, you'll notice that Trump is not getting universal support from right-wing media, from conservative pundits and major social media influencers on a couple of his more recent initiatives, including the idea of deploying the National Guard in Chicago, New York, Seattle, San Francisco, LA, whatever. And there's a reason for that. There's a constitutional problem with that. And a lot of people are going, well, look, you know, DC is different. Constitutionally, this is a different animal altogether from the deployment of the U.S. military in other cities. Now, this is a real bugaboo of mine as well. I have a real problem with it. Even if the people of Chicago demand it, they need to be demanding that from their mayor and then, of course, from their governor. This is not a federal rights issue, and it would literally mean, and I know that they will try to use this and contorting the use if they decide to do this, is that it would mean that they would have to identify an actual military invasion inside the U.S. border in order for the president to take military action like that. And that's not what it is. Yes, we know that it's an invasion of illegal immigrants, and we know that it's an invasion of military-age young men, but they are not all identifying under a single flag from a different single country and wearing a single uniform. So the deployment would not be, I think, constitutionally, I don't think it would hold up. I think the Supreme Court, even the 6-3 conservative majority, would strike it down. And I just don't think it would pass constitutional muster. That's not to say that the president shouldn't be rallying the people to storm their state house and demand the same thing. That this is very simple. It's a very simple solution. They can go to their state house and say, look what the president has done in DC. Look what he has fixed. Crime rates are down. Violent crime rates are down 75%. Burglaries are down 40%, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is what we want in our cities. Now, Governor so-and-so, you have the right to do that deployment and to activate the guard in our state. You need to do what President Trump did in D.C. You need to do it in our cities.
Let me interject some thoughts here. First of all, I'm pretty sure Donald Trump knows what his constitutional rights are as the head of the executive branch of the federal government. I'm pretty sure he knows it. But I know some things about Donald Trump. I learned a long time ago in business. We had very high profile clients for 30 years in the company I started, scattered all across the United States. And it were major hospitals, medical centers. And in every one of those, there were people in leadership that had personas that were actually much larger than most of those people were substantively. And it took me a long time to figure out which of those people that I was working with at that level really knew what they were doing and how it should be run and what their backgrounds gave them the ability and which of them didn't have the ability but got the gig. And I learned the differences in people when it gets to that kind of spot in a big organization. Everybody within the organization that works for the top part of the organization, they know best who's fit, who can do the job, who is doing nothing but pontificating and showing like they're somebody who they're not. And also I learned something about the best of those people. They work the messaging coming out of their mouths, they work it like they're geniuses. And I would hear things in meetings with different department heads at a big hospital, CEO, CFO, all of those people in there around a boardroom table. And as you know, in an organization like that, somebody always needs to make sure the boss thinks, don't forget about who I am. Listen to what I'm saying, because I want to be in your job someday. I think Donald Trump, who came to the whole world of politics after dealing for his whole life with politicians, not just in New York City, but other big cities around the nation and on the other side of the globe. And he learned how to get people to think about ideas and get them by things he said, and many times things he kept saying over and over again, keeping them thinking. All the while, he already had another idea that he was going to do that had little or nothing to do with the idea that was being floated. Here's real quickly, and I'm going to just shut up and let you let you infer your thoughts. First of all, facts, okay? Washington. The story that I wrote and published this morning, it starts off with this rag, and they basically in the first paragraph say, all this stuff is nothing but flowery. Donald Trump is nothing but a blank slate that he's trying to get people to believe he's something that he's not. There's no there there. That was the basis for it. These numbers came out last night. These are factual numbers. D.C. marks 12 days without a homicide after the Trump takeover. That's never happened in the previous 20 years. Go for almost 2 weeks with not a homicide. What are the odds of that? 0.21% based on previous data. 0.37% based on 2025's first 7 months. And the lives that are being saved in D.C. are almost exclusively black. So the facts make a difference. Media out there not reporting any facts, and they have access to them, but their agenda, they never try to hide their agenda. Well, they do by acting like, because we're the media, we're the ones that have all the knowledge, we have access to all the details, and so we're just going to say what we're saying, and you guys out there, you've all got to agree with us. But I'm going to, here's my PS, and I'm going to shut up. I think Trump is not even thinking about going to Chicago or going to Baltimore or going to Seattle or going to New York City. You know what I think he's thinking? He's throwing up these smoke screens and he's listening to all of these leaders. And every day you're hearing the same thing I am. They're going louder, nastier, meaner, more and more threatening to Donald Trump. They're all at the microphone, the television camera, and they're saying things like, don't you dare think about coming here. We'll take care of you. We'll do things that you never thought you would experience. I don't think he's going to do any of it. I think what he's done is he's showing the people that live in Chicago, other parts of Illinois, Pritzker, Mr. Pontificator, the fat man that wants to be president and will run in 2026, I guarantee you. Why? He's got a lot of money. And then you've got the empty suit in Baltimore. I don't know who the heck we've got in New York City, but I think what Trump is doing, he's letting the people that live in these cities, that are living in the midst of all of this crazy chaos and lawlessness, while their leaders are up on the national stages saying, everything's okay. That's why Democrats' likability is now at 19%, headed to 15% or even worse. The people are getting the lesson from their individual states and cities from the orange man in the Oval Office, who's showing the world Here's what the reality is, and your leaders, these Democrat leaders, aren't helping you out. And I don't think he's going to go. And he'll set it up so that the people, perfect example in Illinois, people there are crying for help. And the mayor up there, I mean, I pulled all the stats down yesterday. It is uncanny how horrible the criminality is. They only had 28 people got shot Sunday in Chicago, but crime's down. It was just 28, and none of them died.
Right, right, right. They'll say that. They'll say that it's down 30%. Now, you got to pick a spot on the, you know, scale where they're down 30% from. So they might be down 30% in the last year, but that very well could be up 40% from 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and so when somebody says crime is down 30%, ask them from when and show me the graph.
Yeah.
Show me the graph and I'll show you the lie. And that's, you know, that's the problem with those kinds of responses from a mayor like the mayor of Chicago, who only is the mayor of Chicago because he's a consummate liar. That's the only people that can get elected there. But you know, what you were saying a moment ago about Trump's, you know, basically what you were describing was his art of the deal, by throwing these ideas out there. Now, I will disagree with your very first statement to a certain extent, because you said you think that Trump is perfectly aware of what his constitutional rights are as president of the United States. I would say that he's aware of about half of that. He does not concern himself daily with the minutiae of what, you know, all of, because it's not just the Constitution, it's the, you know, 250 years of regulations, laws, precedent, court rulings that ultimately establish what the legal parameters are with, you know, by which the president and the executive branch operates. Now, we can argue that many of those have been extended far beyond constitutional limitations and they should be reeled back, but that's a problem of what the Congress and what the courts have allowed, because I think that presidential authority is in fact much too large right now and is much bigger than it should have been, and certainly much bigger than what it was designed by the Constitution, and certainly much larger than what our founding fathers anticipated that it would allow to be, you know, to be grown into. But all right, so I laid that groundwork. Now I'm going to explain what you were saying in a little different light.
Okay.
I would say that 50% of the time that Trump makes these outrageous, seemingly unconstitutional, actually sometimes even giving fodder to the left to talk about him being a tyrant or a dictator, 50% of the time when he makes these statements, all he's doing, Dan, is he's trolling the left. He absolutely loves getting a reaction out of them and watching them go apoplectic over something he says. That's been the hallmark of his 10-year, you know, social media, Twitter life, is he absolutely loves driving those people crazy. Now, that's about 50% of the time. Now, about 25% of the time, he's doing what you described. He's using that art of the deal. He's using outrageousness to get people talking about it, to get them going, just like we saw in this town hall meeting with the mayor of Chicago, to get the actual citizens. We're not talking about the white, rich, you know, lefty liberal women from, you know, the Barrington, from the suburbs, northern suburbs of Chicago. We're talking about people coming in from, you know, the south side of town and standing up in front of the mayor and reading him the riot act and saying, we can't live like this anymore. Our streets are too dangerous to raise a family, to raise children. Demanding he fixes it. Well, when they've got the president on camera every single day making these kinds of assertions, then the people that are suffering are going to escalate that locally. So that's part of the art of the deal. The other 25%, so I said, as I said, 50% of the time he's trolling the left, 25% he's doing the art of the deal. The other 25%, I think he just probably doesn't know. As I said before, it's not something that he spends his time with, and that's why you have a general counsel, and that's why you have a team of lawyers around you. And in fact, indeed, I will tell you this. I have a friend of mine back in North Carolina. She's an attorney. Both of her parents are Harvard Law School grads, and she has been absolutely in a tizzy for weeks about some of these statements and some of these claims and assertions and plans and things that Trump says he wants to do that are questionably constitutional. And the one thing that I told her, I said, you got to settle down. I said, first of all, you are falling prey to his favorite game, which is to troll the left. Now, I know you're a libertarian, and the Constitution and the founding of this country is very, very important and sacred to you, but he's trolling them. You're just falling victim to the troll. You don't recognize what he's doing. And sure enough, I told her this. I said, I actually forget what the very specific issue that she brought up to me a couple of weeks ago was. And I said, the reason why he said what he said was, first of all, to elicit a reaction. The second reason why he said what he said was to start a discussion among the American people back home in their home districts with their own mayors and with their own governors. And I said, and then the other thing, let's just assume that this is the other 25% where he really believes he can get by with something like that. He could really do that. I said, it's not going to pass. His own lawyers are going to pull him to the corner, into the corner of the Oval Office. Of course, there's no corners in there. They're going to pull him aside in the Oval Office, and they're going to say, Mr. President, that thing you said this morning in front of the cameras, yeah, that's not going to fly either legally or in the courts. And sure enough, it's funny because I forget what the exact issue was. It was a couple of weeks ago. So much has happened in the last 2 weeks. But sure enough, the next day, when Trump was talking about the very same thing, he moderated his position. He had already pulled back because he got taken to the woodshed by his general counsel. And they told him, they said, look, even if you do this, even if you sign an executive order on this issue, the courts are going to strike you down. And if it gets to the Supreme Court, they're not going to, your own guys are not going to back you on this one. And so, and sure enough, he did in fact pull back from that. So it's a balancing act with Trump because he has these ideas. And look, I think even his bad ideas are America First policies. And I'm gonna anger a bunch of people right now when I say this. This executive order that he signed yesterday against flag burning. It was totally unnecessary because if you read the executive order, all of the list of the things, starting a fire in a place where fires are not allowed to be started, all of these things that you would be arrested for, there's already laws against all of those. And you can't steal somebody else's flag and set it on fire. That's a crime. 95% of the things listed in that executive order were unnecessary because they're already a crime. What's not going to hold up before the Supreme Court, though, is just the act. If I have my own flag and I want to go turn my camera on in my backyard and I live in a neighborhood where I can start a fire, in my backyard, whether it's a, fire pit or a barrel where I can burn leaves in a barrel or whatever the case may be. Supreme Court has said, no, you can burn the flag. You can burn anything. You can burn a Koran. You can burn a BLM flag. You can burn an LGBT flag. You can burn an American flag. That is freedom of expression or speech. Now, of course, a lot of people go, burning a flag, setting a fire, lighting a torch is not speech. Yes, you're correct. Technically, it's not speech. It is expression. And it's freedom of thought. And that often falls under First Amendment protected speech laws, just like a lot of things that we don't like fall under those interpretations of the First Amendment. So I think there's going to be a backlash. People are already burning flags. They're out on the streets in various cities, and even some conservatives have gone out last night and burned a flag in their own yard, in their own fire pit. Not because they hate the flag, not because they hate the country, and these are Trump supporters. But they've gone out and said, "No, Mr. President, this is my right. This is my property. We need to pull back from this one." And I think ultimately, whether he pulls back himself, the Supreme Court's going to pull him back from that one.
See, here's where I am. It's just another chapter of what I said before. It's symbolism over substance. Symbolism over substance. Most Americans decry the burning of the flag because of what it means, even though constitutionally it's been adjudicated to be a right of expression, and under the First Amendment, it's allowable, as horrendous as it is. Trump knows that. Trump knows that. Name me one of his executive orders that has gone to the Supreme Court that has been waylaid. Hardly any of, if any of them. But he has come out and touted dozens and dozens and dozens of things that he thinks we should do, wants to do. And I think what he does, he's a master of floating ideas amongst the populace, whoever the populace is that he's speaking to. Sometimes it's the whole nation. Many times it's our nation and the whole world. And sometimes it's just for other people in other countries. He is one of those kinds of thinkers that really understands human nature, and he knows how to get in people's heads. I played... It's about 2.5 minutes long. It's Rachel Maddow from last night. And she just went off the rails. And I know you were busy this morning. You didn't listen to that part of the show. So I just sent it to you. After you get through with this show, I want you to listen to her. But basically, what she said is, she called him an authoritarian. And it's no longer a question that he is a dictator, wannabe, an authoritarian. And the only question, she said, the most important question that we Americans need to decide is, are we going to let him do it? How far will we let him go? There's no question. He is an authoritarian. He's destroying purposely the tenets of the Constitution every day. I'm serious, buddy.
Yeah.
And of course,
well, he got through.
Go ahead.
She's easy to troll.
Oh yeah.
Because first of all, not only is she easy to troll, but she's already a doctrinaire. She's not one of the people that they have to wake up every morning and read the facts to or the email and say, this is what you need. This is what you need to cover. She's already on the team. In fact, she's one of the writers on the team. She's one of the writers of the email.
Yeah.
So she's not, this is her reading from not what's been sent down to her from on high, but that which she participates in crafting from the left, because she is a full blown Marxist, and anything that Trump is going to do is she's going to be against it. And again, we're talking about anything.
Yeah,
that's why I said she is one of those ones that if he cured cancer tomorrow, or at the very least, not himself personally, because he's not a scientist. He's not sitting there with a, you know, scientific smock on and working in a lab with test tubes. But if he, through an initiative of his own formation and that group, cured cancer, he'd come out against it.
Well, I mean, they weren't going to take the COVID vaccination. Biden wouldn't. Mm-mm. If it was Trump created, if it happened under Trump.
Exactly.
Symbolism over substance. And you and I, neither one of us was pro COVID vaccinations, period. Thank God we didn't. Nobody in my family did, thank God. And there are goods and bads and all this kind of stuff. But we, when things get very, very serious, we as Americans, we've always turned, and we should be always turning to our leaders and our leadership and demanding that they give us the facts about what is best. And what they're watching play out across the nation and around the world, for that matter, right now, is authoritarianism. And it's couched with different labels, but it's pretty much all the same. And they have created a scenario, the left here in the United States. And thank God, I can't believe I'm going to say what I'm about to say, but thank God for 4 years of Joe Biden at the top, because Americans were awakened. Americans were awakened to symbolism with absolutely no substance. And it had nothing to do, nothing that was done had to do with the rule of law, because Biden trampled it to pieces. He ignored it. And then in doing so, how many people came across our southern border? 20 million, 15 million? Do you know that every one of them that came across the border, he was complicit in their law breaking? And after 1320, that particular law, 1321 says very plainly, whoever allowed, knew they were breaking the law and allowed them to come in, is guilty of the same punishment for the criminal activity that those who came in illegally did. That is authoritarianism. And they're doing their darndest to tell us it's exactly opposite of that. That people that want safety, we want leadership, we want the rule of law to be enforced, and they tell us all the time, nobody's above the law unless you're a Democrat. Anybody else, you're not even worthy to breathe their air. In America, even in Chicago, I mean, we only had 800 murders in 2021. And we got it way down. Last year, it was only 700. How can you convince the people? And you know what, Steve? They can't. Facts are showing up, and they're doing that amazingly horrible thing. They're showing people who's really leading, who's really governing, and people who aren't. The ones that they've been tricked for years to support. And there's no substance there. It was all about painting a pretty picture. And buddy, I got a lot of faith in you, because you're right snap in the middle of it. I mean, you are where the rubber meets the road. And I know you. I know you well. And I know how uncomfortable you get when you're seeing anybody on either end of the political spectrum that is doing wrongs against the American people. And we got to find a way to stop it. I don't know. Donald Trump, I think he'd probably be the most qualified at this juncture to do it, but he's only got 3.5 years left. And we know how slow the wheels of justice turn in Washington, and I'm not sure he's got time. If he had the support.
Dan. 3.5 years. Oh no. He's got the left scared out of their minds right now.
I know.
he keeps dropping all these hints that you're going to run, you know, for a third term.
Yeah.
Again, they have no awareness that he is trolling the crap out of them. He know. Look, I watched Kid Rock on Bill Maher's show the other night. Okay, and Bill Maher asked him that very question. He said, he's talking about Kid Rock's relationship, and Kid Rock said, "Look," he goes, "you know, Trump is just like my favorite person of all time." You know, he said, "I tell people all the time, I don't like Trump at all. I love Trump." And yeah, because Kid Rock goes golfing with him, and they go to all the events together. He performed at the inauguration. I mean, they have become very, very close over the last several years. And Maher asked him point blank, he said, "Is there any line that's too far in which you would abandon Trump?" And Kid Rock said this. He said, "Ooh, boy," he goes, "it would have to be a pretty, you know, big line." He goes, "It'd have to be something pretty incredible for me to, you know, to turn my back on Trump." And Bill Maher asked him, he said, "What about this idea of that Trump's been floating and entertaining this idea of running for a third term in office?" And Kid Rock, after establishing that Trump was his all-time guy, the guy he loves the most on the planet, he said, "Yep, that would be crossing the line for me." And it's because those of us that understand the basics of the Constitution, and especially those of us that understand the precedent that George Washington, our first president set. I mean, George Washington could have been president for the rest of his life. He would have been elected over and over and over and over again until the day he died. But he said after two terms, no. He said, "We don't have kings in this country." And he stepped down voluntarily because there was no amendment yet limiting the presidency to only two terms. That didn't come until after Franklin Delano Roosevelt won four terms. And then the country passed a constitutional amendment limiting the president to two terms. But Washington set the precedent of that by stepping away, and every single president who was elected for two terms up and until Franklin Delano Roosevelt honored George Washington's precedent. I don't believe for one second that when Trump giggles, when he's asked about, because he does, he kind of laughs, he gives a smirk and a smile, and he goes, we're looking into that. No, he's not. He is just absolutely trolling the Rachel Maddows of this world.
And it's working because they start howling. And you know what? When they howl and rail against him, what they're doing is taking their attention off of other people and other issues and focusing it on Trump. And he likes that. He relishes that.
Oh, yeah.
And he's always used it in business. I mean, I know people in D.C. that work for him for years. Construction companies, all kinds of architects, attorneys. And every one of them that I've ever spoken to, they're not pro-Trump in politics, but they respect him because he knows the landscape of where he is. And it doesn't matter if it's in Ireland building a new country club with 18 holes of a new amazing golf course, or if it's in Queens and they're building a bunch of around New York, maybe a bunch of burger joints, a chain of them. They have absolute knowledge and understanding. He knows what the heck he's doing. In any kind of situation where there is money involved and there are people involved, no matter where it is or who's involved, he knows how to work the crowd as good or better than anybody I've ever been around. And I haven't met the man. I would love to have an hour of his time just to speak freely and ask him the questions I need to know. But you know what? How do we know what people are? How do we know what they think? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And I think we can take it in context, not parse out a phrase or a sentence, but look at the whole. Look at the whole. How many times has he got popped by the Supreme Court? Dozens of times he said, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and they never happened. He's floating the balloons. I think the Chicago thing, especially about him talking about going there, I think he's sending a subtle message to the citizens of Chicago that says, hey, and it'll probably come up very soon that he's going to publicly make a statement like this. Hey, although you're for 20 years in a row the murder capital of the nation, your mayor and your governor have made it very clear they don't want us to help the people of Illinois and Chicago, so we're not going to get involved. If and when you guys want us to come help, we'll do it, but we're not going to go across that line. I believe that's a message that he's trying to get out there right now. We'll see. I may be wrong.
Well, brother, it is time for me to run off here because I have a meeting with somebody on this side of the river here.
And once again, you won't tell us who the meeting's with. I don't like these things. I need to know everything in advance.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm working on here in the closing moments here. So I have, and this is a very difficult thing doing what I do, in that some of the investigations I'm involved in, they take years to develop. I have been working on aspects of January 6th for 4.5 years that we're on the cusp of finally being able to tell the truth, because now with the access that we have with the new administration, we're finally getting the missing pieces of the puzzle that were denied us by the elements of the old Department of Justice, the old FBI, the old Congress, whatever. And so we're finally beginning to get that access that we've needed for so long. It's still a grind, because even in the new administrations of the new agencies, there's still mostly bad people in there trying to hide this and cover it up. So it's a real grind even now, but we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. I have had a real interest in a particular aspect of how elections are stolen on the scientific level for about 2.5 years. And I met with a specialist in this particular arena just yesterday, and this is a multi-year process for me. That doesn't mean I'm working on it every single day, because obviously that's not true. I've written dozens and dozens of stories about other topics over the last 2.5 years, but it's always on my radar, and it pops back up when I get the opportunity to pursue it, or I learn a new piece of information that makes my antenna go up again. And that has happened in the last few days. There's some new information that's coming out. I also, as you know, for over a year now, I've had a keen interest in how the Butler, Pennsylvania assassination attempt of then candidate Trump took place, and who may have been behind that. Well, there's new information there as well, which I am meeting with people today about. And then in addition to that, there are other aspects related to Secret Service and the president's current security that I think we're going to see some very, very surprising developments on that front in the coming weeks. And then when you texted me this morning and you said, anything on your heart you want to talk about today, and do you remember what my answer was?
Yeah.
UFOs.
Yeah.
And I have never been interested in UFOs in my life, other than the fact that I'm a science fiction fan. I have always, one of the things that even as a teenager, I prayed when I would talk to the Lord, I would say there was one request I always had, that when I go to heaven, I'm really not interested in sitting around on a cloud and singing songs for eternity. I was going to ask God if I could have a starship so I could just go visit the rest of the universe.
Yeah.
So the reality is now, I don't know if you saw this, but a couple of weeks ago, Tulsi Gabbard was asked point blank in an interview about this whole unidentified aerial phenomena that they, I think that's what they call it now. They quit using the phrase UFO. They're calling it UAPs now. It's unidentified anomalous phenomena, because it's not just aerial anymore. They're finding craft or suspiciously craft that can travel in the sea as well as the air and the skies and space. But we've seen all of these weird things of this incredible technology that somebody must have, because we have video evidence and we have eyewitness evidence from the highest ranking military personnel, and they're coming forward and say, yes, we're identifying and measuring actual real aircraft that go from 0 to 60,000 miles an hour in a split second, and they can change directions on a dime at these speeds that would liquefy any biological material, like a human being. A human being could not handle that thrust. I mean, when I say that, I'm not joking. If you go from 0 to 60,000 miles per hour instantly, it would liquefy the human body just for thrust alone. And yet this is these ships and these incidences are being measured and detected at increasing frequency. And so Tulsi Gabbard was asked about this a couple of weeks ago on an interview. It's online. I think you can just probably Google Tulsi Gabbard UAP interview and find it. And she kind of said, well, she goes, this administration's all about transparency, and she said, and we've seen some very, you know, unusual things. And she said, as you know, in my current position, I have to be very careful about what I talk about and when I can talk about it. She said, but she said, there's some there. And so one of the other things that that I'm because of my unique and I'm blessed access that I have been granted in the last couple of years are people that are in the know in that community on the scientific side. And it's pretty exciting. It's pretty exciting stuff. I mean, let's just say that my Star Trek juices are flowing right now. That's pretty much all I can say about that.
I haven't told you this, but I have a really close friend, and I won't use his name. He pastors the largest church in New Mexico. So if somebody that wants to know who he is, you can look it up. He is he's amazing. He's known all over the state of New Mexico, and he and the governor have this constant feud that's been going on for years. And a couple of local radio stations, talk shows, morning shows, they have him on 2 or 3 times a week to discuss negative things about the governing going on in New Mexico. He's been on this show either 2 or 3 times. He's a great guest to have, and he's a really good guy. I've known him for a long time. But he told me, he said, I've been in the presence of UFOs with the military in New Mexico. I've been out there on the reservation, they call it, in New Mexico at least, where they have this alleged bunch of UFOs and people and stuff like that. And he said, it's factual. He said, I've seen it. And I said, you can talk about it? Because he talked about it on the air one time. And he said, yeah, it's not classified. Of course, the reason they don't classify it is because people that would say, oh, yeah, I was in the presence of one, or I saw this or that, everybody's going to say, yeah, and just label you as being a nutcase for doing it. But he said it's going to begin to be revealed a little bit at a time that we're not living alone. There are other entities in the universe that we have no idea what they are, how they operate, what they function as. And our government is petrified at what might be the outcome at some point in the future. So it's going to be
interesting. What the government is afraid of is how the people will react to the truth of this special information. Yeah. Now, and I'll leave you this. This is the last thing I'll say. All right. After God, if you go back to the Genesis story, and after God created the earth, you know, in 6 days, and he rested on the seventh, what did he then command Adam and Eve to do? He told them to go do what? To replenish the earth.
Yep.
He didn't say plenish it. He said replenish.
Yeah.
That word means something.
Yeah.
And that's the last clue I'll leave you with today.
Okay, Reverend. You preached us a sermon. Hey, listen. You know I love you. We're brothers. We're not together enough. You need to get to Shreveville more often.
Yeah. This year's been very different because I have to be in D.C. more often than I was last year when I was in Dallas more often, which, of course, is close to Shreveport. But I'll be back. I'll be back in 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay. Be safe. Keep close. And let me know what you can when you can, and we'll pass it on. Thanks so much for being with us. You're an amazing human being. Best to you, buddy.
Thank you, Dan. We'll talk to you soon.
Wow. Steve Baker. He's the real deal. And we have him every week. I don't know how long this will last. I hope in perpetuity. But it may be something that we're going to have to let him walk away from at some point. However, thank you for being here today. Thanks for sharing everything that we do. Love doing it together with you. Have a wonderful Tuesday. Be positive. We'll see you tomorrow morning right here again, 9 to 11 a.m. at TNN Live. So long.